TNT Radio wants you to get on our soapbox because your opinion matters. Tell us what you really think at tntradio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox, lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Germ warfare is Jeremy Nell on today's news talk radio, TNT.
Germ warfare at tntradio.live is my email address. Send me an email. Thank you to everybody who does send me emails. And thank you to everybody does send me or do send me. Thank you to everybody who... Murray, what is it? Is it everybody who does send me an email? Yeah, I think it's that. And thank you for letting me know where in the world you are listening from. Jump into the live chat. It's on TNT Radio's website, tntradio.live. I've got it open in front of me. Let me know where you are. It's a hot day here at the bottom tip of the African continent, 34 degrees C. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit. I think it's only Americans that work in Fahrenheit. I think the whole world has moved to, you know, the, what is it? Not the imperial. What do we use? Murray? I forget now. We don't use imperial. I think we use some, I don't know what they call it, but we use whatever the normal system of measurement is. You know, zero means freezing. It's not minus something or whatever. metric. There we go. Thanks, Murray. We use the metric system. I think pretty much most of the world uses metric. For some weird reason, Americans want to be different and use strange things like inches and Fahrenheit and feet. Who measures in feet? Like, really, in feet? What's wrong with the meter? by the way, if you are experiencing hot or cold weather, as always, let me know. I'd like to know how it's going your side of the world. It's where I live at the bottom tip of the continent, and just my province gets rain only in winter. Murray was just saying to me now that where he is in Australia, they get rain in summer. So let me know, does it rain in your summer? Cape Town has very dry summers, and then our winters are pretty much when it rains, excepting the rest of South Africa pretty much rains during summer. So I don't know, as I was saying to Murray a moment ago, we're obviously the anti-establishment guys. You know, we like to go against the grain at this this little tip of the African continent. Okay, it's the start of the week. I have a great guest coming up. Let's get to it. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
News you want. They cover the important story.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I know it's quite early where you are. Mike Wallach, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thanks for having me. It's so early, I may talk backwards, but thanks for having me.
Does it rain in your summer?
Okay, so I just moved to Texas where the weather's really weird. It rains in the morning almost every day. Like, you get like this misty rain thing from like 4 in the morning to like 8 in the morning. And then every single afternoon it's sunny and hot. I've never seen anything like it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it works out fine. It works out fine. I lived in Mexico. It rained only in the fall. That was really like the big thing. Like for October and November, it would just rain every day. And besides that, it would be sunny. But you know, let's just jump to the like conspiracy stuff. Like, you know, I was getting my shoes fixed. 2 days ago, and you know, the guy's fixing my shoe. I don't know how he knew to pick me out. You know, like the shoe. What do they call it? A cobbler? And
I think a cobbler is the right word. It sounds very vintage,
doesn't it? It's like super old school. I love going in there, going to the cobbler, and I'm at the Texas cobbler, and he's got like a Texas twang because I just moved here, so all that stuff's really impressive to me. I'm like, wow, this is so cool, you know. And he just looks at me. Well, you know, I don't know what we were talking about, the weather, I guess. And he just goes, you know, man, I just got all these conspiracies floating around in my head, man. And I was like, me too. It's like he looked up in the skies lately. He was like, I know. I was like, that's not normal, you know? Looks like a tic-tac-toe board up there. He goes, I know, man. I think they're softening. I think they're softening us up. That's what you said. Okay. Oh, we were talking about the ice storm in Texas, and how there was this like snowstorm here a year and a half ago, and it was like real hot, and then all of a sudden there was like an inch of snow, and then all the power went down throughout the whole state, and the state lost its water, and everybody was like, why did the power have to go out? And there were a lot of questions. And that's what brought it up for this guy. And he was real sad. Anyway.
Listen, Mike, I want to come to Texas. I want to come to Texas, right? All the cool people are moving to Texas. I think Mickey Willis has been there for about 2 years now. I know that Joe Rogan is there. I think Jordan Peterson is in Texas.
I'm not like a Jordan Peterson guy. I'm not an anti-Jordan. I just never happened to listen to Jordan Peterson, and all my like super culty friends get into him, and I haven't. So I'm like, uh-oh, I better watch myself.
No, but let's be honest, Mike, let's be honest. At least we aren't moving to Australia where Murray is. I mean, nobody wants to live there.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I worked with this producer in Australia, and he was like a super normie mainstream guy, and we were working on a project, a different project, and I told him about my documentary, and he was like, he's like, just to get out of Australia, I had to inject myself six times. I got every brand. I got Pfizer. I got Moderna. I got Johnson & Johnson. Apparently, they put him in a hotel. This was like during COVID. He had to get out for work. They put him in a quote unquote hotel. That's what they're called now. It was my grandparents were in a hotel in during the war. And then... he kept him there for like 2 weeks, and then he got all three brands of the injection, and then he flew to three countries just to make it to New York. Yeah.
Mike, I'm just going to take a moment. I'm just going to take a moment to appreciate that excellent Aussie accent you did there.
It's radio. They can't see what a fool I look like.
You know what's great though? So Murray thinks you sounded more British, more English British. But you know what's so funny though is how accents work. Just before we get onto the actual talking point of this conversation, but one of the accents that I know that people struggle with is mine, the South African one, and I know this because there've been a few movies where they've attempted it and they butcher it every single time. Blood Diamond with Matt. Is it Matt Damon? I think it was Matt. Was it Matt Damon?
It was with Leonardo DiCaprio.
No, Leonardo. Yeah. He wasn't too bad. And I know that in order for him to get that accent, he had a coach. There was a voice coach that worked with him throughout the movie. And he wasn't bad. But, I mean, I'm listening to it and I can pick up words that he just butchers. Morgan Freeman, when he acted as Nelson Mandela in some movie, I forget now, he just didn't even try. He just gave up. there have been a few movies where they've tried to pull it off, but I know that because we are a mangle mush, we are like this complete disaster. We're like a mix of German and Dutch and British. Yeah, so Murray's saying that my vowels are screwed up like the Kiwis.
I love the South African accent. Wait, that reminds me, is that on our last interview, on one of the YouTube comments, somebody said, hey, there's a problem with this guy's story. Mandela died in 89. Is there a conspiracy that like there was a switched Mandela? Yes. Okay, cool.
But okay. But I saw him in real life. And it really was him. Okay. I'm trying really hard now to find a segue into the viral delusion, and I'm absolutely failing. So let's just do it. So let's just segue right into it. So you directed Murray saying go to an ad break to help with the segue. So you directed this really long documentary, and it's pretty brutal. I must admit, it's a great piece of viewing. It's about 7 hours long, 7.5 hours long. It's called The Viral Delusion. Mike, for those who don't know what it is, what is it?
Oh God. Okay, so it's a 7.5 hour documentary series, 5 episodes. We start by interviewing the doctors and scientists who actually looked at the real scientific papers that were used to justify the pandemic, the ones that claimed they had found SARS-CoV-2. And essentially what these doctors and scientists found was there was no SARS-CoV-2. This was a fraudulent claim that was made out of Wuhan at first, and then the other virology labs around the world started to repeat these claims that were never proven. I mean, they never ever found a SARS-CoV-2. So we go deep into that, and we interview everybody's favorite doctors and scientists on these issues. But then we put it in context because it's really important to understand that this is not just a SARS-CoV-2 thing. This has to do with the whole history of medicine, the whole corrupted history of medicine, and especially infectious disease. So we go all the way back to the plague, and work our way up through history. But we start with polio because polio, the declaration that polio was a virus was really the birth of modern virology. I mean, the whole idea of viruses we really get from the 1950s. And so we show that exactly what happened in the 1950s, what the experiments were that were used to claim that polio was caused by a virus when it obviously wasn't. It was obviously industrial poisoning. You have to completely have your eyes closed and your head stuck in the sand not to see that once you look at the data. And you look at what was going on, the mass industrial poisoning by new forms of insecticides at the time. And then since the 1950s, disease has been reinterpreted as virally caused. So they say, oh, yeah, the plague, that was a virus, or smallpox, that was a virus. But if you go back and you look at these claims, it doesn't add up. So you get things like... it's claimed that the plague was a virus that was spread by ticks on or fleas on rats, but you have the plague in places where you don't even have rats, let alone the fleas on top of rats. So there's all sorts of fascinating historical evidence that just doesn't match the story that we're told over and over and over again, whether it's about the plague, whether it's about smallpox, the Spanish flu, polio, and on and on and on. So we go all the way back through history, and we analyze that, and this the same story emerges over and over and over and over again, which is that people get sick because they're malnourished or because they're poisoned or stressed. I mean, those are the real reasons that people get sick, and they either don't have access to proper food, water, air. Or there's actual poisons in their environment. And this whole virology story is a pseudoscience that has emerged functionally to cover that up. I mean, you just don't have to look into what's happening to people if you could just say, hey, there's a virus. Oh, they got sick because there's a virus. So we're seeing the exact same thing now. People getting sick from the injection, but no, it's not the injection. It's new, the reason that you're having some crazy, skin condition now, it's not that your body's trying to get rid of, millions of tiny pieces of plastic that were injected into you. It's that there's a new virus, the monkeypox virus, or this virus, or that virus. So it's politically, I think it has huge implications. And scientifically, it's got to be one of the biggest stories I've ever had the chance to report on, to talk about. So, but yet at the same time, it's considered it's the third rail of journalism. And really, Jeremy, your show and a handful of other shows are some of the only people who are brave enough to actually talk about this topic. You know, I've been in huge debates with other organizations about it, and they're just too scared to report on it. So, you know, I think it's like it's one of the elephants in the room. The room's crowded with elephants these days, but it's one of the foundational issues of our time. And it's amazing when you look at the quality of the scientists, the doctors that have spoken out over the last 200 years, going all the way back to the debates with Pasteur, and the pushback that was given to Pasteur at the time. But you could go up, you know, in the 1950s, and you can look at the doctors that spoke out against this idea that polio was a virus, and the degree to which they were silenced by Congress, by the medical institutions at the time. And then you get to AIDS, and it's just like, holy crap, you know.
So AIDS is the big one.
Once people understand what happened with AIDS, I think the whole thing crumbles.
Yeah, the whole house of cards weakens. Listen, speaking of elephants in the room, I think now is going to be the ad break that Murray was suggesting, so I'll be back with you in a moment.
You should hear what George Eliason is talking about.
What's going on in Brazil with Lula da Silva? Who is this guy? Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Is he a socialist? Or just another fascist in waiting and wanting media attention? We've explained a lot of the parts and pieces, the backgrounds of some of the people involved. And it sounds very, very expansive, but it actually boils down to very small groups of people. You don't want lots of people to know what's going on in this operation that are involved unless they've got something to lose. Now, what you're going to see is, yes, there was a Joe Biden involvement, Hunter Biden involvement, Barack Obama, all these people. And this is one leg, one segment in what's going on today. This is the actual financing behind globalization, how they're going about it. See, the money has to come from somewhere. And why not take it from the governments you want to impoverish?
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I view Al Sharpton as a poverty pimp.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland.
I walk outside every day in fear of white supremacy right here in the middle of the hood. Okay, yeah, right.
My grandparents had a cross burned on their property. We were slaves in the past. We're free now.
I never seen a white supremacist in my life. Never, and they can't point to one. Where the hell are they? I wish somebody would introduce me to a white supremacist. I would like to talk to them and take pictures with them because I never seen one in my life.
Biden says that the country is systematically racist. You know, I almost want to look at him and say, haven't you been the system for the last 50 years?
He's the one that sponsored the 1994 crime bill, which unequivocally basically targeted black men in black neighborhoods.
The polarization. The left versus right, the black versus white.
Pro-choice against pro-life.
I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you.
People have had to make it like they're apologizing for their whiteness.
And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege?
What's more disheartening to me is that those who are within the black community are allowing for that to take place.
So really what we're dealing with is a cultural Marxism that Joe Biden and all the rest from the left were trying to inculcate into our society.
Well, you were once the oppressor, so now I must be the oppressor. You don't avenge evil for evil.
It's okay to say disparaging things against white people. Our former president, Barack Obama, said it, you know, about old white men are a problem. Except when it comes time for him to fly around on their airplanes and ride around on their yachts or be their next door neighbors or endorse them for president like Joe Biden, then old white men are okay. This is their last gasp.
What do progressive socialists really want?
Watch Systematic Deception at SalemNow.com.
Twitter Files confirms the Biden campaign colluded with big tech to shut down reporting on Hunter Biden's laptop. Impeach Joe Biden now. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Mike, why is a conversation about viruses and virology important? I mean, a lot of people say to me, it's just a distraction. It's not really all that important.
I mean, where do we begin? I mean, first of all, there's it's always nice to have the truth, right? I mean, knowing what I know now, I would never, if I went to a doctor and the doctor said, and I was like so sick that I had to go to a doctor, trust me, it would take a lot to get me to a doctor these days. I think the sicker I was, probably the less likely I'd go to a doctor. But if I did, and that doctor said, oh, you know, you have a virus, I would walk out of there, because I would know in an instant that this person doesn't know what they're talking about. They literally have no idea what's going on in my body. So, I mean, I think from a health perspective, your whole health will change once you understand that that's a pseudoscience, and this is not a science that was meant to heal you. It's meant to distract from what's actually going on in your body. But then politically, it's, you know, we see the exact same thing. If you believe that there's these waves and waves of viruses coming to constantly attack us, I think, well, spiritually, it orients you towards, looking to your modern techno-fascist saviors to protect you from nature. You know, even right now, we've got, you know, this these constant waves of mass, you know, animal murder, like where they go and they say, oh, we've got to kill, like, you know, these 10 million chickens because they've got the chicken flu virus, or we've got to kill these pigs because they've got this pig virus. And, you know, what it does is it allows them to manipulate the markets. It allows them to manipulate the chicken, you know, meat market, or the pig meat market, or it allows them to just generally raise the price of food as they wish. So these are all superstitions that are used by the system to manipulate different things, whether it's politics, whether it's market prices. And once you can see this, you start to understand that if we actually want to live a healthy life, we need to wipe that away and be able to focus on what's actually making us sick. So, you know, why are there tic-tac-toe games going on in our skies? Why is our soil depleted? Why are we eating such shitty food? And be able to talk about the real political issues that are happening, because if you're getting distracted with the virus thing, you're just not going to be able to talk about what's actually happening.
So it's about taking control of your health so that you don't have to outsource it to others who might just make you more sick. It's also about knowing what is true. It's also about being on top of things. Because at the end of the day, if now there's another supposed pandemic, you'll have the weaponized knowledge to know how to retaliate to that. And if more people had that same knowledge, they wouldn't be able to do what they did in the last 3 years, I'm guessing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was a huge debate in the 90s, right? Like, so you had the Perth group out of Australia came out as a group of scientists and doctors that came out and said, listen, they said, listen, there's no scientific proof that an HIV particle exists, that there's literally none. And they went through all of the papers that had claimed that that there was an HIV particle had been found and was causing AIDS, and they completely eviscerated those papers. These, you know, proving what a joke they were. But they couldn't get any press. They couldn't get any media. Nobody wanted to cover that story because, first of all, the mainstream media was being puppeteered by Fauci and all these guys. So they were reporting the whole, general AIDS contagion fear story. And then even the alternative press was scared to embrace this idea because they didn't want to lose their audience. They didn't want all of those people who already believed in this virus superstition to say, wait, what are you talking about? There's no HIV virus. There's got to be. Look at all these people with AIDS. So it became this this non-touchable subject to criticize virology and to criticize this obvious pseudoscience. But we're paying the price for it now because here we go again, right? I mean, here we go. Mm. It's AIDS times 100. With, you know, the whole world is locked down. The whole world is being, sold toxic drugs to cure, a trumped up disease. So I think, I mean, this debate is, it's massive. It's massive.
I'll tell you what, before I go to my next question, let's just quickly do the news headlines, Murray.
News. TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. One of the world's largest metal and mining companies has sparked a radiation alert in Australia after losing a highly radioactive capsule in the country's largest state. US pharmaceutical giant Pfizer has admitted it engineered its own treatment-resistant strains of COVID-19, and a senior US Air Force commander has warned America to brace for war with China within the next 24 months.
Do you have a suggestion for a possible guest you'd like to hear on TNT Radio? Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss? Then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
You know, it's interesting. I don't discriminate against my guests. So I've chatted to a lot of individuals, from those who think that SARS-CoV-2 is a bioweapon that was launched onto mankind from a biolab, killed 20 million people. I've had those guests on my show, and you know, it's very interesting, and I always allow myself the margin to be wrong on this. But I am more persuaded by the argument that SARS-CoV-2 doesn't exist, and by extension, HIV doesn't exist in any meaningful sense. Because I've now read too much literature, I've seen documentaries like yours, I've seen interviews with the people in your documentary, I've had interviews with people in your documentary, and there seems to be, Mike, a silver lining from 2020, more or less, where there's this resurgence happening in so many fields around the world. And one of the big resurgences is, what is a virus, and by extension, what is a viral disease? And it's quite important. I think it's a very important conversation. So when people ask me, why does it matter? It does matter, because I no longer take prescription drugs as a result of asking questions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's been a huge awakening, absolutely. I mean, that's going around. And I think that we're seeing, you know, connections between different issues, right? Like the people who are really worried about, you know, geoengineering, and the people who are worried about the fake green agenda, and the people who, you know, are suddenly forming alliances with chiropractors who are well aware of the medical system fraud, and with farmers. And so, you know, you have like anti-vaccine activists are forming these like close alliances with, you know, big, you know, big farming organizations and all sorts of different alliances. So, I mean, as long as we can keep these weaving these communities together that are, you know, that have like the controversial political position of like, please don't poison us. You know, please don't poison my chickens. Please don't poison my ground, my soil, my skies, my water. I mean, this is the new baseline of politics. Like, just like, please don't poison me. But that's such a controversial statement now that it's not represented in any of the major political parties. That's way beyond the scope of any of the major political parties. They all represent, no, we need to continue to poison you because of X, Y, or Z. So yeah, I think there's a lot of new insights that are happening. And I mean, as I was telling, you know, some people the other day, like, I've had a great COVID. Like, I've loved the whole thing because I've made all these friends. You know, I get to meet people like yourself. I mean, once you step into reality and out of the matrix, you start realizing, like, wow, there's like all these like brilliant people out there, like really interesting people doing really interesting. The whole world becomes more interesting because the blurred out, foggy vision that is presented to us by our textbooks is, once you throw that out, you can see in this crisp, clear, beautiful light and discover that there's lots to learn.
Well, why do you think, Mike, then, that so many, I really hate the word experts, but I genuinely mean the word experts, those who know a lot about medicine, pharmaceutical, and other people who are really smart. Why do you think there is this tendency to not want to touch this particular talking point?
Well, I mean, what I when I made the documentary, I interviewed a lot of people, and some of them were just like, they just literally had no idea. I mean, these were like leaders in their field, and they completely didn't understand the topic. I started to ask them questions about it, and I realized that they had just 100% ignorance, and I had to throw out the whole interview with them because they just didn't know what they're talking about. These are people who believed in the virus paradigm. I would start asking them questions about, like, well, you know, do you understand how they isolate a virus? And they didn't understand anything. So there's a lot of people who just literally, they don't understand. The whole thing sounds wacky to them, and for whatever reason, they have emotional you know, blinders on. And then there's other people who feel that the public isn't ready to hear it. So I had a couple big name doctors tell me, you know what, Mike, you're right, but I can't go on camera and say that because the public isn't ready to hear it. And I hate that. Yeah, I think that's super weird. So I think there's a little politicking going on where people, for whatever reason, money. They feel it. You know, it could be, I don't want to completely, you know, throw these people over the cliff. Like, some of them are doing good activism. And for that, you know, there's some good there. But I think it's really arrogant to decide for yourself what other people have a right to hear and what a right to know. And maybe it's just an excuse that they feel like they got caught with their pants down and they don't understand what's happening. My experience is that it's either ignorance or politicking. And it's, you know, it sucks.
And I just want to make it clear. I love a lot of these people who are fighting the good fight. I think that there are differences, you know, in the dynamics, certain details, like, but you know, the existence of SARS. But I mean, a lot of them are fighting against the vaccines and are doing amazing work. And I wouldn't want to suddenly now alienate them because, as you know, from the Lord of the Rings story, Frodo, in order to get to Mount Doom, he required all of those allies along the way. He required all those different battles to happen in order for the story to be complete.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, we've got to defeat Sauron. You know, I'm with you. Yeah, we've got to do this. And I don't know who's going to throw the ring in the forge, but you know,
it's going to be Murray.
I'm behind him.
Murray's going to be the one to throw the ring into the lava.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
but you know what's interesting also to me is people get also very dogmatic about this. So here's something I've noticed, Mike. We can get people very quickly on our side when we talk about climate change. You know, the official narrative, the establishment argument is blatantly wrong. Right? Humans are not making Earth hotter or colder. We aren't that powerful, right? That's my position. And we can easily get people on our side, and people, you know, they quickly reject the established view. Suddenly, talk about viruses and people get extremely angry and vicious and antagonistic. And, you know, we can't be friends. We can't talk about this, you know, that kind of thing. Oh, let's not talk about that. And it's weird. It's like, it's a foundational, I don't know, it's like a foundational card in that house that they just don't want to, you know, make too wobbly and unstable.
Well, it is. It's really embedded in the culture. I mean, that once I started looking at this issue, you know, making a film about it, I started to realize how deeply embedded it is. So, you know, I got my son like a classic Nintendo system. We bought at like a Mexican antique thing. We're like, oh my God, look, it's an original, you know, 1987 like Nintendo. And so we would play it. And one of the games we got for it was Dr. Mario. And which is an amazingly good game, right? I mean, this is how evil these people are. They made the best effing video game, you know, in the 80s based on a little virus. And, you know, you have to defeat the virus. And, you know, so even to like, you know, your 6 and 7 year olds in the 80s, it was being implanted that there are these viruses there. Or, you know, what did we watch? We watched some like, great movie, Independence Day, you know, which has nothing to do with the pharmaceutical world. But it's about, you know, aliens attacking the Earth. But, you know, the big twist comes at the end when they can't figure out how to defeat the aliens. And then they get the idea that they will, you know, they'll give them a virus. And it comes from our main character, you know, having the flu, and then his dad says, oh, you've got a virus. Oh my God, let's give the aliens a virus. So it's really deeply embedded in the culture. And it's easy, I think, for people to forget that this is totally new. I mean, this is just completely since the 1950s. And, you know, the idea of contagion is, of course, older. But it's amazing to like go back and read old letters from doctors and scientists where they did these contagion experiments, and it never works. I mean, it just never works. And you know, it's funny. You know, it's funny that your measles contagion experiment didn't work, because, you know, I also did a chickenpox contagion experiment over here, and it didn't work for me either. And I just don't understand it. And so. I don't know why it is. I know a lot of like germaphobes who like really latched on to these ideas. I don't know. Maybe there's something deeper spiritually going on that keeps people. What do you think
about? What's your question?
I mean, why are they so attached? To the idea that if they're sick, it must be a virus. And there's a million reasons you get sick, right?
I think indoctrination, propaganda, and I think you're right. I think it's embedded in the culture, the way we think. And it's something that I am constantly now trying to challenge myself on. I never thought the day would come, genuinely, I never thought the day would come where I would question something like this. But as you say, you know, the fake pandemic has been brilliant in terms of forcing you to rethink a lot of things that you thought you knew, you know, to rewire your brain a little bit, you know. And it's very liberating, but it is quite scary because I mean, Mike Eden said, and he said this to me, but he said it publicly as well, you know, that it's amazing to think how you get so embedded in the pharmaceutical industry for so many years, and you think you're doing a great job, but a lot of that great work is foundationally flawed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we could talk on and on and on about the foundational flaws, and I'm happy to do it if you know, you feel like your audience doesn't know them yet, because it's just... You know, it's just, you know, it's kind of endless. It's like David Rasnick, you know, talked about how when he was at first, he's a biochemist.
He was on last week.
Okay, great. You know, when he first started hearing about HIV, he wanted to attack that HIV particle because, you know, he was a biochemist and he would create, you know, the right enzymes to attack that thing. And then he realized that has nothing to do with AIDS. The whole story is bunk. You know, to me, it's like phrenology. I think it's, you know, in the early 1900s, phrenology was a major field. I mean, you know, Harvard University had the largest phrenology department in the country. you know, and they were, you know, going on the theory that, you know, certain races were mentally superior to other races. And then they were going to do the examination of the cranium that would show, you know, why that was. And, you know, obviously the science, the quote unquote science, was bunk. They weren't proving anything. They were starting with the assumption that certain races were superior, and then, you know, trying to show how or why with these head examinations. And, you know, it's the same thing here. You start with the assumption that there is a contagious particle that flies from person to person, and then you do all these experiments. But that basic assumption is so deeply embedded in our society that, you know, it's like, yeah, we need some sort of, you know, exorcism to get rid of this idea, because, you know, it's thought, you know, it's basically, oh, you know, this contagious thing has just been sent down by the gods. It, you know, the fact that you're sick has nothing to do with, you know, the fact that your water's undrinkable, your food is inedible, your air is unbreathable, you know, you're stressed, look around, you know.
So speaking of superiority, I'm going to have to say right now that Murray is superior to us because he's got the mixing desk and he wants to go to an ad break. So he's going to cut off my microphone if I don't do that. So I'll be back with you shortly.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Only 19% of Americans have favorable view of Republican House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy. So says the headline of a recent Mediaite story on a new CNN poll. Well, what the headline did not mention is that only 21% of Americans have a favorable view of the top Democrat in the House, Hakeem Jeffries. That was eventually mentioned five paragraphs into the story. Of course, there's little difference between a pitiful 19% approval and 21% approval. In fact, the poll isn't great news for either party. Just 27% say they think Republican leaders in the House have had the right priorities so far, while 59% disapprove of the way Democrat leaders in the Congress are handling their jobs. Also, 70% say things in the country are going in the wrong direction, with 58% of Dems feeling that way, a 16-point rise from last month. And when it comes to issues that Americans care about the most, I couldn't find the word abortion mentioned, not even once. Well, maybe that should have been the Mediaite headline. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The Caesar Rodney Election Research Institute, CREI's, investigation of the US 2020 election found that Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg's spending increased Biden's vote by a total of about 200,000 votes in Texas alone. Though the difference wasn't enough to flip the state blue last year, grant money from the Center for Technology and Civic Life, CTCL, and the Center for Election Innovation and Research, CEIR, CTL, and CEIR may have pushed Biden over the top in other swing states. The preliminary results in Georgia and Wisconsin suggested a similar impact on Biden's vote margin from CTCL spending, and spending in those states was likely large enough and targeted enough to have shifted them into Biden's column. Joe Biden was certified the winner of the Georgia presidential election by just 11,000 votes, and of Wisconsin's election by around 20,000 votes.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know, Mike, we're talking about narratives and shifting paradigms. And I use the metaphor from Lord of the Rings. And somebody in the live chat is absolutely obliterating that particular metaphor. Don't you hate it when people break apart the things that you hold dear? Let me give an example. This is what he's saying. I don't know how to pronounce Jib-Tinuk. I don't know if I'm saying it correctly. He says, yeah, Gandalf lived for 1,000 years and he was a fireworks expert, but he, Saruman and Sauron never thought to use gunpowder to propel the ball bearing. Wait, you got another comment, Jay. It says, Sauron never thought to put a guard or even a barbed wire gate at the entrance to Mount Doom. He's just he's just destroyed our metaphor or our analogy.
This is the team we need, you know. We need people who are like actually thinking, you know, they're like alive and thinking and talking about this. Oh my God, like this Pfizer video, this new like gotcha Pfizer video. What's that?
What do you make of it? That Project Veritas one.
I mean, I think my take is this is a classic example of. So I think it's real. I have no idea if this video is faked. Now, there's a lot of people who are like, "Ooh, look at the angles on this. Looks like a TV show." I wouldn't be surprised if it was faked, but I think it's real, and I think that this is exactly the kind of they're laboring under these same moronic ideas, and it's great proof of it. I mean, they talk about like, well. We're gonna mutate the virus, and then we're gonna create a new strand of, you know, mRNA for it and all this stuff. It's like, you know, you have to watch this stuff like you're watching the latest episode of Star Trek, you know, because it's just gobbledygook nonsense that they're spouting on about. But this is how the industry operates. You know, don't. Mm. They're not just trying to trick you. They're actually gonna do these idiotic experiments. And they're going to think they have results. And you know, because he, you know, he says the two, you know, he basically puts out there the two methods that they use in the industry for doing this kind of research. And one is the monkey cell culturing experiment, and the other is the creation of a synthetic particle. And, you know, I think it's great for people to hear that inside, you know, the vaunted halls of Pfizer, they're doing the same dumb SHIT that you're reading about if you read virology papers. I mean, this is the exact same thing. And this is the experiment that was created in 1954. Okay. So think of, you know, the state of science at the time. And this is the same thing. So they may think that they're mutating a virus, but what they're really doing is just pouring a bunch of stuff in a cell culture and seeing the cell culture die, and then coming up with, you know, genetic baloney out of that experiment. And it's just funny to actually hear them confess their fears. Like, you know, a friend of mine has like a fictional disease. I don't want to tell too much about it, but he has like a fictional disease, and like I can't even tell him his disease is fictional because he believes in it so intently right now. I've got to like let him, you know, spend some time believing he has a fictional disease and like cool down a little bit before I can walk him out of the fact that he actually is okay. You know, like he doesn't need to take medication, because right now he's just like in such a paranoia about it. And the same thing is like, people are in such a paranoia that they're going to mutate the virus. They're going to mutate the virus. Guys, read the paper, read the methodology. There's nothing that they're mutating. They're mm-hmm. looking into like tarot cards is basically what's going on.
And also when they talk about mutating viruses, I've seen this in other scientific literature. They're not actually talking about mutating viruses. They're talking about what's on a computer screen. They're looking at sequences and data and the manipulation of the data, which they'll claim is an interpretation of the real world. But it's nevertheless all happening on a screen in front of them. So what's interesting about that to me, Mike, is one of my guests a few months ago made a very, very salient point where he said that we're kind of entering into this weird kind of, excuse the pun, matrix in which we are merging real world supposed illnesses with digitization of the solutions. So we're getting this weird mixture of reality and computerization of things, and it's changing the way in which we interpret real life. And it's a bit scary because at one point you could say, well, a computer virus is a real virus. It clearly isn't. But what is the difference between that and what's happening in a genome sequence on a, you know, on a computer screen?
I mean, one's happening on a computer screen, and then there's real life, right? I mean, these things are totally different. And just because you can model something on a computer screen, you know, you can model a unicorn on a computer screen. You can model, you know, you can cast spells in all sorts of video games.
The metaverse,
same spell. Yeah, I mean, it's a totally different world, and
No, but it's the merging. It's merging. People are getting confused.
I mean, I think they're intentionally trying to merge these worlds. I mean, if you see all the, like, you know, the video games that you know, they're hanging out there for like my son to play, you know, games like Fortnite and these worlds where you run around with an avatar and they shoot people in the head, and, you know, they've done it up in such a way that it's, you know, it's just beautifully depicted, so that you slowly, you know, kids don't run around and shoot each other with water guns anymore. They're, you know, they're being pulled into this alternative universe where you shoot each other with guns in this, you know, in the digital world. The whole thing's becoming, I mean, you don't need to interview me to talk about all the, you know.
Yeah.
This kind of, you know, these tattoos that people are, you know, they're starting to sell now, where, you know, you can, you know, digitally authenticate yourself with a tattoo on your arm, and, you know, you take a little pill that operates as a battery, and, you know, screw these guys.
I agree with you. Listen, Mike, we are running out of time. I'm thoroughly enjoying chatting to you. I think Murray's enjoying it as well. It's great to have somebody who's got a good sense of humor and doesn't take things too seriously. And I'm just trying to figure out how do we expand your sense of enlightenment? How do we get more people to think critically?
Oh God, you're asking the wrong guy. I mean, I'm so fed up with everybody that I mean, you know, like shows like yourself, your own shows are great. But like, God, I mean, I'm into this idea now, like, don't poison us. Like, can this be a new political movement? Like, let's, you know, hey, don't poison black people either. If you're like particularly worried about, like, you know, saving black people, like, if that's your thing, like, oh yeah, also don't poison black people. Like, don't poison me, don't poison Native Americans, don't poison Latina people at the border, and, you know, don't poison anyone, you know, and let's all work together and be like transsectional and you know, whatever, you know, jargon the you know, the WEF wants to throw at us, let's throw it right back in their face and be like, yeah, you know, whatever, together let's sustainably develop the future in which we don't all kill ourselves, you know. And
like
also
that. Okay, yeah, quickly, Mike, we've only got a short time left, so I'm going to give you less than a minute. Quickly, how can I watch your doc? I'm not even going to call it a documentary, I'm going to call it a mini series. how can I watch it?
Oh, sweet. Okay, go to theviraldelusion.com. Theviraldelusion.com. Yeah, I, you know, you won't be disappointed. I swear to God, there's going to be something in there where you go, holy shit, because that was my experience making the documentary, where, like, I knew a lot of this history from, you know, from my own history of medical history reading, but then there were times when this stuff totally blew me away, and it's just so super interesting. Yeah,
I think it's a great documentary. I recommend it. Mike Wallach, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
I'm so honored to be on your show.
No, I'm honored to have you on my show, and I think Murray enjoyed it. And I want to just say, I am going to leave this conversation in great disappointment, because my Lord of the Rings analogy has been shattered. All right. Mike, I've got to go. It's been a great pleasure. I'll get you back on. We'll chat again soon. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Murray, for producing the show today. I'll be back tomorrow. Send me an email, germwarfare@tntradio.live. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.